Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fella, the tuna country Matt Kempf. And bellied up to the bar is a man who I'm glad doesn't have to be wearing pool floaties tonight down here in the pub. He is the fabulous one, Freddie Benders.
I do have my eight oil down here in case we get any sunshine.
If we got sunshine.
It was like a pool somewhat.
Yes. I want to talk about those glasses you got on. What? Those are some clear frame rears.
These are my Chris Sabos.
They look like something I seen on the Golden Girls. Like, you look like
Ruth does
you
wear
look
these.
Like Sophia.
As if you can't tell by that introduction, we are in a bit of a, I would say, a transitory version of the downstairs pub this evening. Anyone that's local to the area here knows that we had a tremendous series of storms and rain over this past weekend, to the extent that my basement began to flood to a certain extent. And shout out to my wife. She and I were down here till all hours of the morning, Saturday night into Sunday morning, keeping the water at bay the best we could. We've got a little bit of damage down here. It looks like a bomb went off down here with all the stuff that is currently strewn throughout the pub. And for those of you that know me well, know that I am fairly particular about the way things are set up and the way things look. And so it's not real comfortable for me, but I am very pleased that we were able to go ahead and get a show in tonight, because I would hate to have not had a show coming off of the national championship game and then leading into the Masters. All of which we are going to get into here directly, along with some horse racing stuff. First of all, I want to remind everybody we are on social media, and that if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend and let them know you can find us wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Just type in Blockout Sports Pod into your search bar, whether it be Amazon, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, we're everywhere. So let somebody know that you enjoy the show, and that's how they can find us. So the Final Four, of course, was Saturday. Now, as it was happening live, as I mentioned, we were dealing with this water invasion. And all I kept getting was texts from everybody going, "These are some of the greatest Final Four games ever." And I, you know, I couldn't watch a second of any of them. I did get upstairs to watch the very end of the Houston game, the Houston Duke game. And so I saw them be down like 9 with, I don't know, how whatever time was left. It was towards the end of the game. Mm. I came down. I said, "Well, this game's over." And then I ran up just to check it, and Houston was on the line with an opportunity to take the lead. I had no context, really. I didn't know what had happened. Of course, I have since went back and went through that game, and specifically those last 4 or 5 minutes.
How many times?
Twice.
I did 4.
And there's a few things I wanted to, before we get on the national championship game, I wanted to touch on that Final Four game specifically.
Oh, we have to.
And I have some thoughts about how Duke played those last few minutes and how Houston did. But I wanted to open it up to you guys, and since you guys were watching it live, and kind of give me how you were thinking the game was going to go, when you thought Houston really had a chance to win, and then ultimately what you think the difference was at the end of that ball game that allowed Houston to win. I'll start with you, Tuna.
Yeah, I think the thing that we talked about that was the big, you know, difference in this game was them taking Tyrese Proctor completely out of the game.
Yeah.
He was non-existent in this game. And then you had mistakes by young kids on Duke's team. Like, they looked like deers in headlights at that point in time, I thought. And then Houston, the veteran team that, you know, they let Duke make the mistakes.
They did.
And, man,
I literally took two pages of notes watching that I was just amazed by.
And Houston, as we've been saying all year on this podcast, they just are relentless. Like, mm-hmm. they never quit. Now, they kind of got a taste of their own medicine at the end of the national championship game. But they are just a relentless team that was never going to quit. Tuna, you're right. Like, I thought Duke made some, to me, glaring errors in the last 3 minutes of the game. But the last 10 minutes of the game, Houston was playing a level of defense with which I think most college teams are not familiar.
I think when you look at, like, over the course of like 40 minutes, Houston just makes everything so difficult. Like, they chip you every time. They get in every passing lane. They're like, it's just mentally draining to go against these guys. And then those last couple minutes, like, frustration is just setting in.
Get their hands on everything.
And
offensive rebounds, they're there.
And Houston is so – what I love to watch is they are so disciplined defensively. Like, they have, you know, as all teams do, they have a lot of rules on when you go over or under a screen, when you switch a screen, when you double, when – you know, how your rotations work, and they hardly ever make a defensive mistake from that standpoint.
I thought it was crazy when they did. You see the two guys, two big men walking, and they call timeout, and they're like over there running it in their head together. They haven't even made it to the huddle yet, where most guys will go there and the coach will kind of yell at them. They're over there going, wait a minute, you were supposed to do this, and the other guy's like, oh, okay. I mean, it's just crazy how they are so well coached far as that is concerned.
Like, the way all these offenses now is just like constant motion. Like, Houston gets a body on every moving body.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to get something on you, whether it's an elbow, a shoulder.
No, you're right.
You know, you're not running past anybody free will. They're going to, like, a body part's getting on you during every type of movement.
Yes.
So
can I throw a couple things out
Absolutely.
That I found fascinating in this game? Just like, it was 59-45 at the 8 minute mark. That's when I watched this like four times. I'll start right before they showed Hakeem Olajuwon. Okay. And they're down 59-45. Crier hits a three, and then some guy named Gildas, the Purdue transfer, gets a silly technical where he hits someone in the face.
Mason Gillis.
Gillis. Two-shot technical. And they get the ball. Then Crier makes two
Purdue
or three
idiot.
Free throws. That is a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It should have been 8. That is a 7-point swing at the 8-minute mark to make it 59-51, which blew up. Then But I don't want to go through the whole thing. But what I do want to get at is, I found it fascinating. And then we'll talk about a couple of the big plays that you all think happened. But Proctor, James, Nate James, Proctor, Brown, who had the dreads, and that Gillis from Purdue, in that 8 minute mark, in those 8 minutes, 4 turnovers, 3 dumb fouls, 2 offensively, 2 missed free throws, and 0 points. Now, Malawa went out a couple times because he got in foul trouble. Knupel and Malawa had 0 shots, 0 makers. No assists, no steals.
Is it Malawi or Magumba?
Magumba? Maybe it's Magumba. No steals. Like, I'll tell you who disappeared in that 8-minute mark. Knipple. Knipple was nowhere to be found. He had one shot attempt, and it was blocked when he took it to the basket. If you remember that play, it was a huge play.
Yep.
I cannot believe that they had James throwing the ball in out of bounds every time. He looked flustered. They got two steals off of him, and then one of them was another deflection that luckily, dude, what is Knipple doing? Like, I'm not saying it's his fault, but let him throw the ball in. Why is it the ball in his hands for them to get a foul and take him to the line?
I thought for sure.
Flag was 1-for-7. He took all the shots.
I thought for sure that after the first turnover that Duke had against the press, that they would make an adjustment. And I thought they might have Flag take the ball out. He's the best passer on the team.
Right.
He's got the size, because if you go back and watch that, and I was paying attention to this because I was wanted to steal some of what Houston was doing from a trapping standpoint for our team, and they weren't like Duke was sending a guy long, and Houston really wasn't guarding the guy that they were sending long.
Right.
They were like, we don't think you can get the ball to that guy.
To that guy.
And so now you had five guys guarding four, which makes it almost impossible at that level. And I was right there with you. I thought that was a big coaching mistake, honestly.
No, for sure. I mean, dude, let me ask you all a question, because you all had to – I know you two were on this. At the I thought one of the most important plays that just absolutely blew me away was when they were bringing the ball down, and it was, he misses. Oh, what about the play when they're coming down 56-51, 58 seconds left. Houston's coming down, or Duke's coming down with the ball, and Houston, and they're like, okay, well, they got a foul. They're going to foul right here. And Houston decides not to foul.
Yeah.
Dude, think about it. They foul there. Knipple goes to the line, makes two. Then they're just in a foul battle of continuing to foul the wrong guy. The mere fact that they did not foul there, because even then now, what's the name goes, they're not going to foul. And then someone goes, Grant Hill goes, well, they better not now. And for them to not do that and mess up, you know how many times players end up making that foul with like 6 seconds left and you just can't help it? And they didn't make that foul was absolutely amazing to me. And I feel like that was one of the biggest plays of the game. I mean, because right after that's when you have the turnover, and then they get the ball back because they didn't foul.
Yeah.
Just like you said, it just goes with the intensity. Do you remember the Kansas game too? Did y'all watch that Kansas game when they played at Kansas, and Houston.
Oh, okay.
And there was no way they should have won that game.
Yep.
It was over.
Absolutely.
And they literally continued on to where it was almost ridiculous that they won that game. I'll never forget that, because I was like, how did they win? I almost feel like that was in the back of their minds. Like, we have done this before.
Oh, of course.
This year, we have done this. And I guess Samson, you know, talked about it after the game, how they didn't give up. But I thought that Flag got a little tired. I mean, he had great looks that he normally makes. He just didn't make them. But good Lord, he's the only one that shot.
Hey, he was 8-for-19 on the day.
Right, and 1-for-7 with those last 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But dude, what about the two big guys?
Which we talked about.
Pryor and Sharp had 11-9 in those last 8 minutes. And Roberts and Tugler, those two guys, and we can talk about it forever, but they didn't win the championship. So we could go on about it, but I thought those guys played so big. And going into this, didn't you think that they were really like that? I feel like that Florida took Tugler out of the game.
Oh, I was going to say, and the Duke, I don't think he was very present in the Duke game.
No, he just did. He did a couple, like, when the ball went off of Proctor out of bounds, he reached in and knocked that ball off his leg.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had a couple putbacks, like dunk follow-ups. I thought that Roberts hit those two free throws as a 50-something percent free throw shooter. He made both of them, but guess what? Last night in crunch time, he missed them.
Mm-hmm.
He missed them. I thought that all these games were fascinating.
LJ Cryer going 6-for-9 from 3-point range was, that was a showing.
Oh, dude. Now, what do you think about the call on Flag?
Yeah.
Did you think that was a foul or should have been called or what? Because that was a huge call.
No.
I didn't think it was a foul at all. You're on the line.
I could be convinced that it was. I could be convinced both ways. It's whether or not you blow the whistle and call that at that point in time.
I did not think it was a foul, especially the way that, as physical as that game was, and in that particular moment of the game.
Yeah.
But Duke has no one to blame but themselves for being put in a position where a call like that could be made and could cost them the ball game.
Yeah.
There's... You know, you play the last 4 minutes of that game 100 times.
Right.
And, you know, it like you said, it was literally one play the other way, like on a steal or shots that Duke had some good looks.
Dude,
in the last
Flag,
4 minutes.
Flag, it was all him. Yeah, and I thought he had a couple nice turnarounds that he hits that shot all the time.
I just
and I'm sorry, it was 67-61 when Houston did not foul.
Right.
And then they came down and Sharp hit that three. At one point, he scored 9 in a row.
But I thought
that game was great. I thought Florida did the same thing to Houston.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just so many.
I don't know. I think the officials did that to Houston.
And
I really believe that.
And that was going to be one of the points I brought up, because you get that all the time where a team plays a particular style of basketball. And it happens at literally every level of basketball. And everybody knows that, as you said, Houston is physical. They chip you. They will stick a leg out. They'll put their elbow out, whatever. And, boy, it seemed like a lot of little ticky-tack.
Well,
towards the
end, here's the thing. They established how the game was going to be played or called in the first half.
Right.
And then they just
changed it completely.
Yeah.
Then they changed it.
So, like, how are you supposed to react to that as a player?
Right, because I remember looking at someone going, man, they're letting them play.
Like, we've all watched enough college basketball, especially low-level college basketball this year, Fred, where we've seen some of the worst officiating that you can have.
Yeah.
That comes with the territory.
Right.
All we ask for, I think, as fans, is a level of consistency throughout the game.
Right.
If you're going to make bad calls on stuff like that, do that throughout the game.
Right.
You know, like, that way the players understand what you're looking for, what you're going to call, what you're not going to call.
Right.
This was just two completely different. It was almost like a completely different officiating crew between the first half and the second half.
Right. Yeah.
So
you're right. It was. And for Cryer and Sharp to have the ball, for both of them to touch the ball at the end,
mm-hmm.
the two shooters, the two gunners, the two guys that have done it all to get them there, for neither one of them to shoot the freaking ball was just such a letdown. I mean, Cryer gave the ball up. He got the ball in bounds. They threw it to him, and I thought he was going to get his shot off. Then he throws it to Sharp, and I think Sharp, as you all know, should have shot it right then. And it was such a downer that we don't get a last shot.
It's like
after all that.
It's like when I bitch about soccer. when you sit there and, like, these guys just keep waiting for that perfect shot. And yeah. They just, you know, they're scared to take the shot on the goal.
Yes.
That happened in this game at the very end. They were trying to find the perfect shot and wouldn't
and
take
the
shot.
And it's the most frustrating thing in the world in soccer and that. Not, and I mean, Monday night, it was just, dude. I do think that that Clayton finally came alive a little bit at the end. And
well,
of course,
Houston did a hell of a job on him.
They did, and man, I'm gonna tell you that those two big boys for Florida, they hang around in there. They hang in there, and they battle as much as anybody on deflections. What's the big tall kid's name? That not with the dark hair. That actually plays center, I guess you could say, for Florida.
Hauk? Yeah.
Man, that kid, he's tough. He's just relentless. He will not give up. And I felt like he kept them in the game in order for Clayton to finally make his shots. A couple of those other guys on the team played good in the first half and kept them in it.
Will Richard did a hell of a job in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like Chinny Lou just because of his name, but I don't know. He did not have a good game. I don't know, man. It was a great game to watch. It was just that was probably one of the most frustrating 20 minutes of basketball I've watched in the second half. That whistle just kept going nonstop, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was tough to watch, but all in all, like the Final Four and the championship game, great games.
Yeah.
A few things aside.
Youngest coach since Valvano to win it.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of this guy for multiple reasons. I really wish Kelvin would have got him one, but
yeah.
He seems to be a good coach, but
I'm right there with you. This was a great opportunity for Sampson. And I know as an IU guy, you're supposed to harbor some ill. I'm actually totally the opposite. I think he's made some mistakes. Of course he has. And he's owned up to them, but he's a coach's coach. And I really, especially those last 5 minutes, I was really, really. And not to mention I had a substantial amount of money on the Cougs.
I was just saying, both these guys had issues with texting, both head coaches. And what Florida's head coach seemed a little bit more illegal than what Kelvin Sampson was doing. So
Allegedly. We'll make sure we
I just
that
said
in
what's
there.
What he seemed to be doing.
Yes.
So,
but, it was a great,
at multiple schools.
It was a great college basketball season. Great Final Four tournament had its ups and downs. I know we talked about how the first round or whatever, there weren't a lot of buzzer beaters or classic games. Well, I think as the tournament progressed, we got into some really good stuff. And
I just don't think, like, I don't like when teams that have won, you know, fairly recent football championships win basketball championships. It's just not fair. Like, we need the Villanovas the Dukes and stuff, and Kentuckys to get up in there, and UConn's to win these championships. We don't need football people in here. At least not premier level football programs.
Right.
And then I got another, like, one shining moment.
If
they're going to show the 2013 Louisville National Championship on the One Shining Moment, then damn it, we need that banner back up in the freaking Yum Center. Mm-hmm. If you can show it, we can show it.
Do you know that now that I think about it, I did not see, I've not seen One Shining Moment from this year.
It's all the same. Same one every
year. But I still, I want to see it every year. It's a tradition, you know, and yeah. I honestly, as soon as the game, I was disappointed, and I turned the sound off, and I was doing something else, and I think by the time I looked up, they had already done it. But yes, I mean, dude, come on, that banner should go back up. I think everybody knows it, and maybe if the NCAA ends up being deemed completely irrelevant by
that could be tomorrow. That could happen by midnight tonight. So we don't know. I mean, we already have a football championship that's not even sponsored by the NCAA.
Right. If and when that happens, the first thing they should do is put that banner back up. As a matter of fact, I think they ought to just do it now and
We have tried to do it, and the NCAA has basically said the minute you do that, you're going to forfeit every game.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that
so,
right?
Yeah, so it's like...
But do you think they could actually enforce that?
I don't know. Or it's just another lawsuit that they're going to have to fight.
It's like... To me, it's empty words.
It is, but Louisville don't need to be spending money on more lawsuits right now.
Well, so,
I'll be honest with you. Just don't hang the banner. We all know it was there. Yeah, like, you know, but
it happened.
Yeah.
It happened.
We all seen it happen.
But yeah, man, I mean, it was, you know, the game didn't end the way that we wanted it to, per se, but it was a lot of fun to watch, albeit a little frustrating. For a variety of reasons, but it was a great college basketball season. Saw the resurgence of Louisville, saw Kentucky have a really nice run. Indiana didn't have a good year. We hope that they found a coach that can get things back to a competitive level. And as we know, with the state of especially college basketball, anything can happen in a very quick turnaround. And, of course, I saw it going around on social media this week, and Tuna sent a text. It seems like Indiana's new coach has a particular type of player that they're looking at these days.
Your roster looks like the town of Mayberry, buddy.
Oh, jeez.
I have a picture down here in the downstairs pub of the Indiana Media Guide from 1989, and it's like a painting, a drawing, and it's Coach Knight, and he's surrounded by five white ball players. Mm. And when you sent that text out, I said, "Well, I think it's very it's kind of commendable." They just won't be able to recreate the 1989 Media Guide photo. Because right now, I think that's literally what they could do with the players that are on the team.
It's pretty wild. Like,
But anyway, that's totally as an aside. Anything else to put a topper on the college basketball season, fellas?
I thought it was great. I mean, I thought great. Again, I know that the transfer portal has changed a lot of things around and NIL and everything, but we need more upsets. But at the end of the day, I mean, the best teams were there, and I thought the games were great. We need to get better refereeing.
That's not going to happen.
And that's not going to happen, so it is going to be what it is. But, I really enjoyed these games, at least the Elite Eight for sure.
All I ever want to see with officials is like when it's after the game, they make the coaches and the players go sit in front of a podium and get asked questions.
Absolutely. I've said this for years.
The officials need to be in this after every NFL game, after every, you know, basketball game, you know, maybe not like after a Tuesday night, you know, Louisville versus, Indiana State.
Right.
But, like, when you get into conference tournament, when they have the players and the coaches come out afterwards for their quick press conferences, the referee should be out there for that.
Yeah, just have the lead official.
Yeah.
Just have the lead official come out. He's got 5 minutes to talk about the way they called the game, and then you get 5 minutes to ask three or four questions.
And like, I know they're going to give, like, bullshit answers, but the fact that they know that they have to go sit in front of the gauntlet.
Be held accountable.
Absolutely.
Just a little bit. And I know they're held accountable ostensibly by the league and the NCAA and all that, but it's different if in the newspaper the next day it says, like, well, we asked Ed Hightower about that block charge call, and this was his answer.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Ed Hightower. That's a callback from 25 years ago in the Big Ten. So college basketball is over. Tuna, how many days is it until college football kicks off again?
136
days.
I'd get that tattooed on me, but I'd have to change it tomorrow.
As we move forward now, from college basketball and a championship, we go into another one of at least my, and I know Freddie, and I think Tuna to a certain extent, favorite events on the sporting calendar. It's the Masters. And
yeah,
I know,
baby.
I know Tuna doesn't even really care as much about the golf as he does. He just wants to see Jim Nance in the Butler cabin.
Oh, he definitely wants to.
Poor
see
Jim
that.
Lost that. He can't win a championship game. But,
I know.
I mean, it sucks. Those officials apparently didn't know that he was going to be retiring soon. But I don't know, it's a shame. No, look, I like the Masters. I love the Masters. I just, if I was going to rank it in my majors in golf tournament, if I was just going to rank the golf tournaments, it'd probably be fourth or fifth on my list.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, what comes ahead of it?
Number one, I love the U.S. Open.
Okay.
Okay. The U.S. Open, you get in a different course each time. These players are going apeshit and crazy. I like the Open Championship. See,
that's number one for me.
Okay. I love
that. I love the Open Championship.
That's number two for me. Number three is definitely Waste Management. It's like in February, like Super Bowl Sunday, like is the final wrap. That atmosphere, you don't get anything like that in golf, and
right.
I think that's why I like it so much.
It's totally different from anything else on tour.
Yeah. And then I'd put the Masters underneath of that, probably at fourth. PGA Championship is just basically like another tournament. Give out a Wanamaker trophy at the end of it, so it's special. But the thing about majors now, though, that you don't get is you get the LIV Tour guys get to come back in.
Yes.
And that's what I like about it is this is the first tournament where the LIV Tour guys, the old PGA all together, gets to come
back
in and play.
Boys.
Yeah.
And see, like, I'm with you. Like, I love the – and to a certain extent, the U.S. Open, too. I'm not always crazy about how the USGA sets up the courses in the U.S. Open, which knocks it down a peg for me. But I do like – it's always on – you know, I mean, you might have an outlier here or there, but there's, 15 courses that are, like, iconic U.S. Open venues. And then same thing with the British Open or the Open Championship. But one thing that I love about the Masters is that we get to see it every year. And so we know every hole and where the best spots to be. And where not only we know every hole, we know where the pins are going to be on Saturday and Sunday. And so I kind of love the familiarity of it. And, of course, to a almost disturbing extent, it looks perfect for television.
Oh, dude. even the par three looks perfect.
Was it last year or 2 years ago when the tree fell? And then, like, within, like, 8 hours, this gigantic tree looked like it had never even fallen? Yeah. How is that shit even possible, man?
It didn't take anywhere close to 8 hours.
I'm just saying, like, 8 hours afterwards when they showed it. Like, no, it was just...
It fell down, almost crushed, like, 10 people. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
That tree was gone within 2 hours.
And the ground was put back together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like there was no trace of a tree ever even falling.
Now, I do have...
Wouldn't it be cool if they could put another tree there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would have been the ultimate baller move. If there'd have been a 100-foot pine tree right there in that spot.
In there.
But, we were kind of talking on our text thread a day or two ago, and we're talking about different things that are going on. And I do, you know, I love the Masters. It's one of my favorite things in all sports. But I do, to a certain extent, get a little bit, what's the right word? I get a little bit... perturbed, or that's not the word I'm looking for, but I was listening to like the XM radio, the PGA Tour radio this morning, and I'm listening, and these aren't like, dude, I'm telling you right now, for any listeners that are golf fans, if you have XM radio, Fred, do you ever listen to the Rocco Mediate show.
Yes.
Dude, that show is so good. And he was on yesterday. Like, his show yesterday was incredible. Because he's kind of irreverent about it, but he's got a player's perspective and still loves the event.
Oh, yeah.
But he can poke fun at some different things. Dude, I turned on the PGA channel this morning, and it was that one real dorky guy, Gary Williams or whatever his name is.
Who talks like a...
And he was like, here's the thing about
the
Augusta.
The guy that wears the Vineyard Vines gear all the time.
That's Charles Boy.
He's like, my God, this dude.
He's like, here's the thing about Augusta. When you're... I mean, this is
Who he is, Tuna?
No.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait to see him.
Oh,
dude.
No. Yeah. You would be annoyed if you pull his picture up right now.
This is almost verbatim what he said. And, like, it brought me back to, I don't know if you remember when Tom Brenneman was calling college football, and he was talking about Tim Tebow.
On the WB.
And, he pops his collar.
You know, he was talking about Tim Tebow, and he's like, if you spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes with this, your life will be better for it.
That was Urban Meyer quote.
Well, Tom Brenneman said it on. He said it as if he was talking
like many
about
things. Urban Meyer probably stole it and said it said it a later date.
Well, so this Gary Williams this morning's like, when you walk on the grounds at Augusta, it makes you the best version of yourself.
Oh, God. See, that's what drives me nuts about the
Masters.
No.
Yeah. And he's like, we all speak to each other and with more respect and a more reverential tone. It's like, you can't just, it's a spiritual thing. And look, dude, my dream of life is to go to the Masters. I was thinking about this in the car today. I have very few bucket list things left in sports. Going to the Masters is one of them. But this genuflecting at the altar of Augusta at some point can become a little tiresome. Tiresome is the word I was looking for before.
Yes.
It's a little tiresome.
Fatigued.
Yes. And that really like I mean, he literally said, we become the best versions of ourselves.
Yeah, well, I know someone there that ain't the best version of himself.
Yeah, and
they let him in.
And that's what we were that's what brought me to this is Angel Cabrera is back for the first time since 2019 after having spent a couple of years in an Argentinian prison.
Still don't speak English.
Not allegedly.
Yeah, for domestic violence. And, dude, he speaks English. He didn't, he didn't speak English because he didn't want to answer questions.
Well, when he won the Masters, I remember they never spoke.
Well, I mean, that's
all.
A whole
it was
different.
All,
But he speaks English. Trust me.
I even heard his interpreter was in state. It was in prison too.
I mean, how are you going to talk?
Well, the prison was in Argentina, right?
But I mean, on the list of things that bother me about Angel Cabrera, the fact that he didn't speak English is about 76th on the list. The fact that he beat up his wife and choked her or whatever the hell he did.
And has no remorse when they interview him.
And has been very kind of matter of fact about the fact, like, oh yeah, you know, I did my time and now I'm back. And the chairman, I at least give him this credit that he addressed it, which I wasn't sure that he was going to in his press conference. Chairman Ridley. And
Chairman Ridley,
that he basically said, look, we don't have, like he said, we find anything with domestic violence deplorable. That should be full stop. But then he said, you know, he served his time. He's a former winner. We don't have anything on the books that says anything about having been in prison and getting out. And if you're a former winner, now that might be something they might want to add to their list of things.
Yeah,
like,
they only have one female member, and oh, by the way, if you beat a female, you get back in. I mean,
like, you know, as touchy as they are about everything there, you would think that that might be a line of demarcation and say, if you've been to prison for putting your hands on a woman, you're not allowed back on tournament grounds. That does not seem to be like a bridge too far as I'm concerned. But
I'd say if you ever stole a fan's cell phone, you would never be allowed back on. But fortunately there, they don't allow cell phones. So, okay.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
I'm just stating laws.
Have you seen the rules there? Don't get caught littering. You might be in a Turkish prison. So.
I mean, I don't think you need to be taking cheap shots.
That wasn't a cheap shot. I was just worried about the integrity of golf.
Oh, yeah. And, man, I can see how sincere you are about that from the look on your face.
I'll tell you what, you better not ask for on your pimento cheese sandwich to be extra burnt, the toast.
Well, hopefully.
Or there's going to be a problem.
Don't even get it right. Darren Revelle was taking shots at the food. He said all the food out there sucks.
No, it's great and it's cheap.
I know it's cheap, but he's just like, yeah, none of this is good.
Well, their pimento cheese could be Bill's Famous Cheese Spreads, which I heard is great, which I know is great.
See, I'd put that on some bread and eat that up right now.
That's right. That's right. I think all the food and stuff that they have there is pretty neat. I haven't had it, but I heard that it's you know, fills up your tummy. And
what do you expect for, like, $2.50.
Yeah, it's like $2.
I bet it's good. I mean, how you can't? I mean,
you may say best $3 hot dog I've ever had.
Yeah,
in a green wrapper.
But
everything's in a green wrapper.
So, as we record this, tonight is Wednesday. The Masters will tee off in the morning. You have your obvious storylines of Scheffler trying to get back to his form that had him winning week after week after week after week last year. You have Rory trying to complete the career Grand Slam. You've got the LIV guys getting an opportunity to play in a major.
Bernhard Langa's
final Masters. How will the LIV guys react to, like, do you think that to make them more comfortable, maybe they would let the LIV guys have one of those, like, cart speakers they could put right next to the tee box?
They got them like Rodney Dangerfield had in Caddyshack 2, where you just rip off the side of your bag and
hit
the button, starts playing music. You get some 38 special blaring out of that thing.
But,
yeah.
So, obviously, there's tons of storylines. I thought maybe to start off, before we get into maybe who we of some deeper cut guys, give me, let's just say, three golfers, and it can be the top or like that you're looking at to be there in the mix on Sunday.
I'm going to give four because two of them are top and two of them are low level. Well, one of them is really low level. Colin Morikawa, obviously, he has yet to get a green jacket. He's been close and he's actually been playing really good golf this year. Victor Hovland, who is kind of looking like he was
really
2 years ago. Victor's playing really good golf right now. And then I'm going to go, Russell Henley. I like the way.
Yeah, that's a good pick. He's been playing great.
Yes. And then a guy that I think you can get great odds for top 10, making the cut, all kinds of stuff. A guy that's probably had the best year so far of his career, Thomas Dietrich, who has finished up here, up in the top 20 in the Masters before. He won the Waste Management. I think he's made 10 out of 12 cuts this year. I really like him. I like the odds on him. And I think most guys that do well at Augusta are guys that have already done well at Augusta. Like, you see a lot of repeat performances out there. So that's kind of what I'm going to go with.
Freddie?
I don't know. I think DeChambeau's somebody to look at. They could come in there. I think Rom is someone to look at that is starting to play better.
Rom has finished top 10 in every Live Tour event that he's played in.
Right. And I think Rom wants to get back on that stage. He's a golf enthusiast, knows all the history. You know, they asked Morikawa who won that 86 Masters, and he had no idea.
Well, he said Rom talked about that last.
Rom knows everything about the game.
He talked about last year how he completely collapsed, and he was right. Like, it was odd and awkward coming back here and have to answer constant questions about me going to Live Tour. And right. Now he's like a year removed from that. So yeah, he could.
Right. And I've picked Travis, and I have Cam Smith and Matsuyama. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you too, that I like that's been playing rather good is Sepp Straka and Corey Connors.
The Canadian.
Yeah, I like both their games. Corey Connors, man, he is always up there.
I have a terrible relationship with Corey Connors when it comes to gambling.
Do you really?
Yes. It never goes good for me when I bet for, against, head-to-heads, anything he's a part of. So I just...
You just steer clear.
I just try to act like he doesn't even exist.
Okay, but we all pull... I think we're all here pulling for Ludvig
Åberg.
Because who doesn't love him? I love the way he talks. I love the way he interviews. I love his attitude. I love his game. I love his short game. I love his throwback Adidas sweatsuits. Everything about Ludwig, I think, is fantastic. He is very refreshing. Maybe a late. I don't think you'd ever count out Tyrrell Hatton. He's such a grinder. Cameron Young is also always up there for these. And then a pick that I've
heard. He's a real long shot to make the cut, I believe.
And then, what do you mean? Why? They ain't played yet.
What I'm saying is odds-wise.
Oh, okay.
If gambling, you get on there. Like, I think you can get plus money on Cam Young.
But
to make
I'm
the
hearing
cut.
About this Robert McIntyre.
You know about him, the Scottish guy.
I've been hearing a lot about McIntyre and how he plays these very creative greens that
he went on a tear in the U.S. Open last
okay.
year.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. Is that if he played with his dad or? Yeah, I know who McIntyre is now. Yeah.
Oh, squirrely looking fella.
Yeah, he's got the teeth
He's got teeth.
The teeth like a Irishman.
Yeah, like Scott. Yeah, Scottish guy.
Scottish guy.
Close enough. Yeah, they're right there next
to
each other.
And his dad was like the caddy or yeah, he won a pretty.
Yeah, I mean the Irish Scottish don't mind being confused for one
another. I just said they were close enough. Like it's like you don't call somebody from Texas tell them they're from New Mexico. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of issues there. But it's close
who
enough.
Who do you think's not going to do well?
Who do I think's not going
to
do
who
well?
Are you,
who,
this I can't wait
because
to
this is the opposite hex. This is reverse hex, meaning they will do well.
Then lay it on us.
Unfortunately, it's the first name that you said, Bryson DeChambeau. I don't think Augusta's built for him. Like, you got to have finesse, and he's not a finesse guy.
Well,
like,
I mean, now, he showed it in a couple of those wins last year.
Yeah, I don't think he needed much finesse at Valhalla, but he finished, second at Valhalla and won the U.S. Open?
Dude,
or whatever.
Yeah, I thought some of his putting and everything.
No, his putting's gotten a lot better. I don't know.
It is hard to be I don't know. Rom's a big hitter, and he's one there, but
does
have a good short game.
So good around the greens. I mean,
yeah,
he's got a little Seve in him.
He does. He does.
And then that's it for who I think's not going to do well.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't want to.
I mean, I'm shocked by this.
I don't
too,
think
no,
Corey
honestly.
Connors is going to do well.
Well, I don't see Spieth doing well. I like Jordan Spieth, but just he's so emotional and
he's good for two days. You don't know which days they're going to be, but he's good for two days.
I don't see him being a factor. I don't see Neiman. A lot of people always love Neiman.
Talk to me about,
of course, I don't see him doing much.
Talk to me about Xander Schauffele. Like, where's he been at? Is he recovering from injury? Is that what's going on with him?
I think he's
been non-existent all year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he is amongst the players I was going to talk about. That's, I look okay. for him to have a big week this week.
Oh, really?
I am.
Is this Adam Scott's last one? Not last one, but.
No.
Oh, he's 50, though.
Maybe.
Or getting ready to turn 50 is what it is.
That's probably right. I'm opposite of Fred on Jordan Spieth.
Okay.
I think Spieth has a real chance to win this tournament.
Well, do you now?
And I think...
And what makes you think that?
Because as you guys were talking about before, guys that play well and have had success at the Masters tend to keep playing well and have success at the Masters.
Right, like Danny
and
Willett.
Spieth, who's another guy on my list.
Yeah.
2016?
Last year he was leading.
Yeah, he was in the mix last year. Yeah,
and
Bernhard Langer.
Spieth has had obviously his wins. He's also been in tremendous. He should have won another one had he not taken the quad.
Yeah,
on 12.
He took the quad.
Hold on, 2016. Do you know what Danny Willett's final score was?
2016.
That's when he won it.
No.
He was
5 under.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
5 under won that tournament.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I remember it being something like
that. That's crazy.
I like Tommy Fleetwood this week. My, and of course.
Long hair, don't care.
Of course. I'm not going to say anything about a major, and I'm going to pick him again to win the whole thing. I'm taking Rory McIlroy.
Well, of course
you
are.
To complete the career Grand Slam. By God, if we do this podcast for another 25 years, one of these times he is going to win the damn thing.
Nope.
Well, he's playing.
I think you
got very
good
right
now. You got a better chance of walking the around Augusta than Rory does of winning it.
Now, let me tell you this. I got in this contest. Today,
who likes the gala too?
I got in this contest today that John Daly has his name on, and it's, you know, it's like a draft, but it's in tiers. So there's like, I think, 8 to 10 players in tier 1, tier 2, and it goes all the way through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, through 8 tiers.
Okay.
And so here are my... I wanted to get you guys' immediate reactions to, because I didn't want to go with the obvious ones, because I feel like you're going to have to get lucky in order. The winner of this thing wins $250,000.
Okay.
Okay. So in tier one, I took Xander Schauffele.
Yes.
In tier two, I took Tommy Fleetwood. In tier three, I took Sepp Straka.
Yep.
In tier four, I took Tigala. In tier five, I took McNeely. In six,
like
I took
McNeely.
Yep. I took Cam Young. I took Danny Willett. And I took...
tell me you took Phil. Phil, no. A lot of people are saying Phil's going to make the cut.
I like Dunlap in that last tier.
You
know
what?
He's going to be down there.
I looked at him.
Yeah.
I looked at him.
I assumed he was in the last tier. Yeah.
I really thought about it. But I thought, man, it's hard to, a former champion, like, it's hard for, like, it just stuck out to me.
I don't want to win. And nothing personal. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But I'm definitely not pulling for slow play.
Nobody is.
I'm not. Cantlay has a great putting game, and really the course fits him great.
And I didn't pick Patrick Reed on this thing strictly because I can't root for the guy.
Well, and you know who I'm tired of betting on? I've picked him 50 times is Tony Finau. Not picking him again.
I almost picked him for this thing too.
He's my American.
Corey
he plays
Connors.
Great the first day or two, and then.
Yep.
I do think his game fits Augusta pretty well, but I'm not sure that he has the mental fortitude.
Tuna, what's the information you had on Homa?
All right.
Oh yeah.
Here's the.
Because he's not been playing well.
Here's the inside scoop on Mr. Homa.
This sounds like
Tuna got this on the back fields of Augusta.
Just let me set this up by saying
running around the grounds.
It sounded to me like this would be maybe one of your bets of the Masters. It sounded like you got great value, and you think that this could really pay off.
He's right now you can get him at -105, which is damn near even money, to make the cut. And I know you're sitting there thinking, damn it, Tuna, don't be an idiot. He ain't made a cut all year. I agree. But.
But.
The sun shines on a dog's ass every now and then. And I feel right. like Max is about to have his ass in the sun. And what it is, like, he did a practice round, and he shot 7 under under the front nine. And in an interview that I listened to with on the Pardon My Take podcast, he said he is the freshest golfer out there because he hasn't played a full weekend yet. And I like, he said everybody else is tired because they golf too much and they're making cuts and have to do these 4-day tournaments.
I'm not sure.
He goes and golfs 2 days and then chills out.
No.
So my man is ready.
I can't go with that.
My man is ready. He's going to be doing his walk and putt drop focus move again.
Love
which,
it.
Yeah.
Love
that's
it.
What I, honestly, that's been the worst part of his game, I think, is the putting has been awful all year.
Really?
And this is not a course where you want to try to figure your putting out.
Oh, no.
So all signs point to don't bet on Max Homer to make the cut. But there's just a little gut feeling I have.
I love that. Pick one winner. Who wins the Masters, Tuna?
Brooks Koepka.
Freddie, who wins the Masters?
Big game hunter.
I'm going with Ludwig Åberg.
Is he related to Ludwig Åberg?
Ludwig. Can his name just pronounce like it looks?
Well, that's how Swedish people pronounce it.
I think he needs to get a name like the boss.
Hold on, dude.
Let's just call him Ludwig.
You sit down here and spout out these foreign soccer players' names with the correct accents and everything, and it's spectacular to watch. And you're telling me you can't get my man Ludwig's name right?
I can't get Ludwig.
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 Åberg.
Åberg. That's who I am taking.
Okay.
And as I already mentioned before, I'm sticking with my man Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, baby.
I mean, he's like I said, he's bound to win one of these. He has to. But I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. I plan on trying my best to
honestly, his personality is very Augusta National. So if there's
please.
Ever somebody
oh,
that deserves to win a green jacket,
oh,
it's
my
him.
God.
I could see him and Jim Nantz rubbing elbows in Butler Cabin.
But I can't wait to watch. As always, it's going to be great television. No matter what we say and we do, you know, joke about it, but you know, there's not a better looking sporting event on television.
The birds
every year. Well,
the fake birds
pipe that in.
I love it though.
Yeah, pipe.
Every sport should pipe in weird sounds. I'd like to watch a Chiefs game with some birds chirping in the background.
If you ask Bill Belichick, the Colts always used to pipe in crowd noise, from what I understand. So
imagine watching an F1 race with some birds chirping in the background.
So that'll
Jim
be awesome.
Nance on the call.
Oh, God.
Listen to him call a NASCAR race.
Now that would be fun.
I would watch that.
Him in the middle of like the infield at Talladega.
Welcome, friends.
Can you imagine that? Oh my God. That'll be great. Cannot wait for that. Starting tomorrow. Now, Fred, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we had some big derby preps this week, and as we mentioned last week, the
look at that face.
Oh my
I feel God. Like we're going to see that a lot.
Who is that?
It's Rory with
Rory.
His hand on his head.
Frustration.
We should make a meme of that and say, did you hear what Tuna just said about me? But, Fred, we had the Derby preps. We had the rescheduled Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, yesterday.
Yes.
A couple other races that I'm sure you want to talk about. So, bring us up to speed on, what happened this weekend.
Well, we had two races on Saturday, and that was the, wait a minute, we already talked about the Wood Memorial in Santa Anita, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, so we had a race on Tuesday, and there was a really good field in there. A lot of horses needed points to get in, let alone win the race. And, UK Bill is very happy as we talk about this because he's been on this horse from the get-go. I tried to beat him with River Thames. I don't know who Travis had.
Is this Unbred Square or something?
Burnham Square. Yeah. Burnham Square did finally get enough points to win. He's a deep closer, and he closed. East Avenue took off from the beginning, which is another horse that got in just by getting second in that race. But he took off and damn near won the thing, which was impressive to me. That's a Brendan Walsh horse, and I love Brendan Walsh as a trainer. I have some friends. We all kind of
90210
kind of know him. No, different Walsh. And East Avenue got second or placed, and show was River Thames. So River Thames was flying at the end as well, coming along with Burnham Square. I got close to winning that puppy, but took third, and those three horses are in, all three, and they are going to make things very interesting. I did find out that when Rodriguez won the Wood Memorial, that he did not have blinkers in that race, which is something to think about when you're making notes on some of the stuff I got. I want to say that there's only one more Derby prep left. The Lexington used to be called the Coolmore Stakes. It is at Keeneland, and it is for all leftovers. So, if you're a burrito, if you're still running in your California burrito, run right on over to Keeneland. if you're a couple horses that have not made it, that haven't ran in a while, I don't really have those horses. It's too late for Manicott Road. I do have horses that did not make it in the Derby, but still can. The top 18 points winners get in the Derby, and then they will move on from there. Usually a couple, at least two or three, will get in. Grande, Baeza, and Flying Mohawk are the three waiting to get in. And we've got a couple horses from Japan that have decided that they're going to possibly ship over. Admire Daytona. You ever done that, Tuna?
Admire Daytona just got the Churchill Downs today.
Yep, and Heart of Honor.
When you could drive on the beach there.
Two Japanese horses. However, the best Japanese horse that has won four and beaten these two horses before is Lexor Cafe. And
Lexor Cafe is a Japanese horse?
To be taken seriously, yes. Another forever young type. Who has really done well. Forever Young, if you remember, came in second in a almost dead heat to Sierra Leone.
Should have won.
For second
Dirty
in the
horse.
Derby when
Sierra Leone bumped him.
Mystic Dan took that one.
Yeah, Sierra
Mystic
Leone
Dan was third in the Arkansas.
Bumped him.
In case you wanted to know. And who was third in the Arkansas this year? Cole Battle. That's why you don't throw those horses out.
That sounds like a badass
Mage
linebacker.
Mage was second.
Cole Battle.
Right. Mage was second in the Florida Derby. Who was second this year? Sovereignty. Great horses, both of them. I can't remember. Justifies one of the articles. Sandman. Publisher. Second comes over. I'm going to go through my updated horse. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but what I wanted to tell you is I've done a lot of added notes. I went through all the... I figured River Thames and I knew Chancellor McPatrick was not going to make it. I did not have him up there. But I did know that Burnham Square was probably going to get in the top three, and I knew River Thames was too. So I already numbered them in there. But I went through, and I gave you my... I think I've already given you my top 18 that I had here. But I went and did a little extra work before I switched this back over to you. I went through, and I looked at... What horses have not had dirt in their face? What horses have only ran against five or six horses? What horses have only ran in California without rain? What horses have not dealt with a 10-hole post to deal with? Well, that would be any horse that's ran in California, except for one. And I tell you that my number one horse has not done that yet. He is 4-0, but Journalism, a mid closer, which I love mid closers, not deep closers, has not really ran in a lot of traffic in any of his preps. Maybe a maiden claimer at the beginning, but lately, no dirt in the face, not dealt with any kind of 10, 12 post, no. Another horse that has not done that, Rodriguez, has still not necessarily done that, and he just won, but both of those horses, the last two races, only got half the points because there weren't enough horses in their race. Something to look at there, because Journalism is everyone's number one. Well, I'm not sure if he's going to be my number one after I've done this research. I'm going to give you nine horses that have done that with many other horses, won their last two important preps, and then I'm going to break it down to the horses that have done that and won at Churchill. So the horses that have... I'm going to break down the next few. So Journalism and Rodriguez, I have not done all three. Okay, three of my criteria. Here's the ones that's done two. My number two horse, Sovereignty. My number three horse, Cole Battle. My number five, Tappan Street. My number 10, Burnham Square. My number 13, Tuna, River Thames. My number 18, Chunk of Gold. Okay, those horses meet two important criteria. I'm going to go a third one and say, okay, I'm really going to look at those horses. Now, tell me who's won at Churchill. Here they are. There's four of them. Citizen Bull has done all three, met all the criteria. Yes, he races in California, but he was in two more big Derby preps with a lot more horses that Journalism and them and Rodriguez did not run in. Okay, so he meets those three. Next one, Sandman, also a win at Churchill, and has done all of the above. A deep closer there. Citizen Bull is going to be up in the front. Tiztastic has a second and a third at Churchill, not a win. But that's good enough for me. That's an Asmussen horse. He will be a stalker up by the front. And then Owen Almighty, who ran a dog of a race in the Bluegrass. And you can X him out right now because he is going to the Pat Day Mile. Remember I told you last week that the trainer really didn't want him to run in that race? The owners wanted him to. I think he proved when he runs against these horses in a longer race, it just didn't work out for him. But Owen Almighty does have a win at Churchill. So look at him in the Pat Day Mile to be the favorite for sure. and he will take off from the front and not come back. So anyways, those three horses are something to look at when you're looking for value. And then later on, I'm going to even get deeper and go into like 5-6 criteria. And that's how I end up breaking my horses down when it gets to the end, when I put my final numbers in order for Derby week. So anyway, something to think about. I'm not saying journalism and Sovereignty and Coal Battle and all them are not great horses. I'm just saying some of those West Coast horses, they get away easy. And I got to tell you, this year, I don't think that a California horse is going to win it. Even though Baffert has quite a few of them, but a lot of his horses have fallen off the wayside. He's got Citizen Bull there and Rodriguez. A lot of his other horses that were at the front have fallen off. And quite frankly, I think that's all he's got. And he had like 7 horses that could have gotten in, literally.
Right.
So anyways, just something to think about. Ian Wilkes is that local trainer for Burnham Square, who has definitely got the most points in the Derby now. Pletcher finally gets in with River Thames. So now he has a horse in there. Brendan Walsh gets in with East Avenue. And then we've got 3 Japanese horses and find out what goes on with them. Asmussen now has 2, Tiztastic and Publisher, and I love both of them. Anyways, there you have it. We'll get back on it.
Awesome. And yeah, as we are obviously gearing up.
Oh, can I say one more thing?
Yes. Well,
I wanted to tell people the criteria that I used to circle these horses to get those 9. I went through every Derby prep and circled the ones that had the best feel, the best top 3 in them. Meaning, for instance, the Street Sense was way back when. Sovereignty, First, Tiztastic, and Sandman. That's a great Derby prep. Okay? The Iroquois Stakes, Owen Almighty, Giacoso, and Macero. Well, guess what? Have you heard of the other two? No. So guess what? That win wasn't a great win. Do you see what I'm saying? So I went through and circled all the Derby preps and made sure that the horses I circled to get that first criteria won hard Derby preps against Derby horses that are in this Derby competition. So, just something to think about.
Awesome. And we will be gearing up, as I was saying, heading into the first Saturday in May, getting ready for the Derby. It will be ramping up more and more. As we are in a little bit of a uncomfortable scenario down here in a what was a partially flooded downstairs pub studio.
Squish, squish, squish.
Thank God we don't have that tonight.
Tina brought his mop.
But we're going to go ahead and close the bar a little bit early tonight, and we're going to go ahead and call last call, and I'm going to start it with Tuna. Last call.
A couple things real quick. I know you guys wanted a quick rundown from UFL scores.
Absolutely.
I believe Colin, I think we came out that he is a Michigan Panthers supporter. Is that correct?
That is true.
Well, the 3 of us down here are still undefeated.
Damn right we are.
As the DC Defenders, the Arlington Renegades, and the St. Louis Battlehawks were all victorious this weekend. Michigan Panthers took it on the chin to the Birmingham Stallions. So coming up this week, I think we are playing each other. Wait a minute. Here we go. The DC Defenders at the St. Louis Battlehawks at the Dome at the American Center.
Gonna be a big, loud crowd.
It'll be awesome.
It'll be
awesome to shut them up.
Sunday at 3 p.m.
Oh, right when the Masters is in the
so
heart of
no
it.
One will be watching no, that game. No.
I mean, no
someone
one
will be DVRing it.
Now, Friday night, when there's really nothing going on, you can tune in to watch the Arlington Renegades and the Birmingham Stallions, which are 2 undefeated
teams.
That'll
be a good game.
Yeah, it would be. It is going to be a great game. And then also, we do have a national champion in this city that I feel like this is a basketball national champion, collegiate. The U of L men's team managers won the national championship.
I saw that.
So apparently what these teams do, they all, anytime they travel, they all play the other team's managers.
Always.
And it comes down to like the top teams, and then I think fans vote on the final four for out of a list. And then so Louisville's team got voted into it. They got to go down to San Antonio for the final four events and all that. And they played in the manager's final four and won the championship. And I thought it was cool. Pat Kelsey went down to support them when you That's know killer. That there's a lot going on with transfer yeah. portal and recruiting and all that stuff. And yet he found the time to go down and support his boys. So that's I think awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, great.
And that might be a big reason why he, the U of L Board of Trustees, is meeting tomorrow for a significant pay raise for Pat Kelsey, and it's well-deserved.
Yeah, it was a matter of time before that happened. It
needed to happen.
Yep.
And that's what I have.
Awesome. Freddie.
Well, Freddie is run. All of his college basketball teams have run out. They're all done. I had so much fun doing a little gambling on that. I've been doing well on my derby preps and the ponies. Even though I was unsuccessful Saturday for really one of the first times I haven't actually cashed some. I cashed a couple on the card, the undercard. I should have given Travis two of them. Sounds like he was betting all day. But I do want to tell you, Tuna will get a kick out of this. So you know how I started betting my my mid-major teams when I got real hot.
Yeah,
and I was betting.
That's
just,
what I said
I was,
earlier
I was
in
just
the show
looking at the records.
About watching low quality basketball.
Yeah, and I was looking at the records, just basically going. And then as I continued on, I would look at their division and see who had beaten who and how they were doing. Well, I thought, you know what, brain, I'm going to start betting baseball.
That a boy.
And look, and I got records. On my baseball teams, like 3-1.
No, no, don't go off that
seven.
Shit. You can never go off
that. You know
that.
What? I thought I would do a couple of
oh, no,
parlays
no, no,
like
no,
that.
No, no, no.
And you know what? Don't do that.
No, 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 no.
No, don't do that at all. I lost, you know, I lost on the Dodgers a few times, lost on the Giants.
Yeah,
and
no.
These teams are like 9-1.
Yeah, you can't
or
do
9-2. 9-3, whatever. I can't do that. I thought it could be that easy,
oh,
too,
no.
But it's not. It's
baseball,
just not.
There's lineups and pitching, and there's so many variables that go into it. I've been, like I told you guys outside, the big thing that I've been betting on, they're called Nerfy bets, and it's no runs in the first innings. And
yeah, I'm going to try
you
that.
Find, like, matchups there, you know what I mean? You're,
yes,
you can usually get in
action.
On that. Now, Colin, he had a big ticket winner this weekend. Did you see that on that thread?
I did not.
He bet on, I think it was three games where there was no home runs in any of the three games, and they all hit.
Wow.
And I was like, that's something I've never thought about betting on a game. And that was pretty cool that he
yeah,
did
he
that.
Hit a he had a big
yeah
hit
that was
on
nice
that.
Congrats on that one, Colin.
And I wanted to also say that it's been a long time since I've done this, and my bracket was only ended up with 12 losses, I think, which is the best I've ever done ever. I ended up coming in fourth because I had Tennessee in the Final Four, and that game got me. Over Houston, but I did have Florida winning it all, and haven't had that before in a long time. I haven't picked the winner actually, and I didn't get any money for any of it. But I did very smarty pants over here put a wager on Florida a long time ago. A nice little future bet that snuck up and got me after that game. I didn't even know I made the bet until it hit.
Those are the best bets to win.
It was down
when
in,
you forgot that you even made it.
Yeah, it was in my what's it called on my site?
Your Outlaw Mud Show betting site.
Yeah, I don't even know what that thing's called.
Well, I had it on there. It was in.
It's called Your Phone Has Been Infected with a Virus.
Don't give them any sort of
publicity. It was in my
publicity.
Futures list there with my Boston Celtics. Anyways, happy to say I won 140 on that. So that was a good little collection on the Gators. That's it for me, dude.
Excellent.
I'm never good as tune on a last call. I got to get better on that.
I think that was just fine.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I got to really bring up some good stuff.
I just talked UFL.
Yeah.
Well, and like I said, this is a little bit of a different episode tonight because of what we're dealing with down here in the studio and that. But I'm thankful that we were able to get a show in. Before we get off the air here, I wanted to say that Colin, as Tuna brought up, did have that big hit the other day. If you want to follow him for his Masters picks, he's taking Colin Morikawa to win, and he is taking Russell Henley as his long shot.
Me and Colin, we kind of got – we're on the same page right now. Yep. I like where it's at.
I think so. Can't wait for the Masters. Tuna cannot wait to listen to Jim Nance all weekend. Freddie can't wait to be dressed in a different golfing outfit.
Oh, dude,
every day.
I've got it ready.
And
everybody goes, you play golf, man? Did you play golf today? Nah, it's Masters week.
And I can't wait to hopefully be down here next week in a little bit more comfortable space. I want to thank everybody for listening. Want to remind everybody, if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. Let them know they can find us wherever they find their favorite podcasts. For the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kempf, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody.